Alejandro Escovedo and Texas Roadhouse rocker Joe Ely. Two great acts on a not-to-be-missed evening. The series finishes Saturday, June 15th, with the blistering energy of roots rocker Dave Alvin and the Guilty Ones, supported by Houston favorite Mike Stinson. To purchase season tickets, call 936-441-7469, extension 201, and visit the Sounds of Texas Music Series.com for more details. Don't miss Lucinda Williams, Guy Clark, Alejandro Escovedo, Joe Ely, and Dave Alvin in the Sounds of Texas Music Series, presented by the Friends of Conroe and KPFT Houston.
You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Here on 9.1 FM KPFT Houston.
My microphone is naked.
Wow. Sexy.
I don't know if I trust it.
It's going to be one of those shows, huh?
It's always one of those shows.
You should practice safe hacks.
Would you like this windscreen?
No, I'm going commando.
There's all a right. fly. There's a fly on that windscreen.
Mike Commando. Welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
And he's
Groovehouse.
Dwight, you got your voice back.
It's here. I found it. It was in this bag.
Right with that. Where that? With the charger that you.
That's right.
All right, welcome to the show. We're glad you're here. It's cold outside, yes. Well, duh, right? So I hope that you're going to get all warmed up and cozy. And
by the fire. Just crackling fire.
Around a Pentium 4.
There you go. Or old 286. Getting hot.
Yeah, Dell with an unupdated BIOS. That'd be good, yes. Just wait, you know, just don't get the battery acid on you. Don't get it too hot. All right, well, visit us online at geekradio.com. That's our website where you can find out all the information you need to know about the show. You can hang out with us on IRC, irc.cuckoo.com. The channel is Tech Bites. You can use your own client or you can use the Java client, although the government says don't use, turn off Java.
That's cool. Yeah, I've got a story on that.
Turn off the Java, but if you're feeling lucky, feeling like you want to take a risk, you can run our Java IRC client and hang out with us in the IRC. We won't mind. And as far as I know, it hasn't been compromised. It will not hack your passwords, if you're lucky. Hmm. Let's see if I'm still ops and all of that good stuff in the IRC.
I am still locked out, so I'm going to need some ops.
There,
if you want to throw some
no
my
ops.
Way.
Ops.
Oh, really? You're still locked out, huh?
I don't know. I haven't set up a mail domain on that domain that I registered with back in the day.
So you can't really...
can't really go recover my password.
If you set, yeah, but he can't recover his password because the email doesn't get to him.
Oh, and I haven't tried to reset mine. I'm just a rebel like that.
Just a rebel.
I just let it complain and tell me that I'm not recognized.
I like the auto opt.
Way of yourself. I noticed it let me do that too.
Yeah, I always opt flicked. That's why he never noticed. But I don't have anyone to opt
yeah,
me.
Yeah, because
now,
it
so
doesn't auto. It doesn't
down.
Auto opt me. It never auto opt me.
Ah. Well, I had to get mine reset, and it worked, and then I couldn't connect you last week, but now everything seems good. All right. I think it does. Yeah, it does. All right.
So do you get auto-ops?
I get auto-ops now, yes, because I identify as soon as I join. It identifies me. It logs in.
Do you get Decepticon, though?
So IRC is available to you, and you can also send us questions.
Thanks.
What?
Did you kick me out of chat?
No, I didn't kick you out.
Okay.
I just gave you ops.
Not anymore.
Hey, you're still in there, though.
You kicked me out.
No, I did not.
No, it kicked me out.
There, now you're ops.
Oh, it says you left. Broken pipe.
Yeah. Promoted and then left.
I promoted you and then it kicked you, or what?
Yeah, I looked at the screen and it said no connection, disconnected.
Huh. All right.
It's okay.
You can come back if you like.
Okay.
yeah, so use the website any way that you feel like you need to use it. It's there for you. And the phone number is 713-526-5738 or 713-526-KPFT. We are not that close, but we are getting closer to fundraiser. I guess is happening at the end of February. So
we're not close at all.
Close enough. It'll
sneak it'll, right up.
You wasted your sick days, by the way. Just want to point that out. apparently there was a silent drive. I need to find some people to thank. I got some emails about people that made pledges online during the quiet campaign, and I have neglected them. Let's see if I can find that. There's we had like $250 come in thanks to the collective efforts of David in Nassau Bay, Michael here in Houston, and Vitas made a pledge online during the quiet campaign. So we want to thank them for pledging some money to the show. And I'm assuming they did that, you know, on a credit card or something. So
why can't all campaigns be silent?
That'd be nice. You know, if we could. And also want to thank Chip, who pledged. So there's another $150 and another quiet campaign for another $150 from Gwen, who's a returning member. So
does that add to our next one, or is that just all its own quiet campaign?
I have a feeling
thing?
It doesn't.
Yeah.
I have a feeling that, you know, that generosity, while beneficial to the station and our egos, will not help us in the upcoming campaign or fundraiser at all, which is unfortunate. But think about that. Just, you know, start percolating on that, and we'll have a good fundraiser and get that out of the way. All right. So, you know, tonight, also, we need to point out that if you're listening here locally in Houston, the show that comes on after us is not going to be the Vegan World Radio anymore. It's going to be Explorations. And
Explorations in meat?
No.
It's going totally opposite? Oh, okay.
It's going to be Explorations, and I'm trying to remember the guy's name who does the...
In Space and Time.
It's a journey to the center of your mind.
It's not that kind of show.
Psychedelia? No? Oh.
I'll have to find his name. It's His, I can't
Dr. remember. Mogwai.
No. All right.
It's not Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog, is it?
That is awesome, though.
That's
it's
what we
Dr.
ought to air.
Dr. Michio Kaku. That's
now, that sounds made up.
That's it's not.
Yeah, he's a fake, because you never see him on every TV channel, Science Network, PBS, NPR, whatever. Okay.
Yeah, this guy, he's legit, and he's great.
He's been around a long time.
I've seen him on the TV. He's very entertaining, and when it comes to this,
But is he listed as an expert?
He's the Henry Samet Professor of Theoretical Physics in the City College of New York and the City University of New York. He's a futurist, a communicator, and popularizer of science. Science!
In a fist fight with Neil Tyson, who would win?
I'm sure. Or Tyson.
Tyson in around.
Neil deGrasse Tyson, yeah.
So if you're listening in Houston, Texas, if you're listening locally, that's coming up at the end of our show. So I think that's kind of cool. I'm kind of excited about it. It's something to listen to on the way home.
Cool. Notice how they bookend our show with like legitimate shows.
Now they do. I mean, just
sorry, vegans.
The vegans moved to 8 p.m. Tuesday.
They got a better time slot.
I guess they
have a better time slot. Yeah.
Yes, they've been promoted to technology bite status.
Ooh.
So. Our listeners were getting sleepy without all that protein.
Well, it was fun when they would like bring in, you know, vegan cookies.
We are going to miss that.
We're going to miss that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not them though.
Dr. Michio Kaku.
Vegan war.
All right. So
we're never going to get vegan treats again.
They were very nice on the last.
Oh,
week
we'll get
they were
we'll get treats. Hard.
They left a box of chicken cookies.
All right. So anyway,
they're organic.
There's a flaming bag of vegetarian cookies on the porch. All right, so enough fun at their expense. They're not here to defend themselves. All right, so we're going to go out to San Antonio and do the Technology Bites Info Shot. So take it away, Info Shot.
It's the Technology Bites Info Shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
So Jay mentioned earlier the Java issue where the government says, the Department of Homeland Security recommended that computer users disable Java unless it was, quote, absolutely necessary. Now, Oracle did release a fix. You know, Oracle bought Sun, which owns Java, and so Oracle owns Java now. Oracle released a fix on Sunday for that flaw. But just after that, Department of Homeland Security says disable Java. Sunday, Oracle releases a fix to allow people to use Java again. And then a new security flaw has been discovered. It's available for $5,000 on the black web, and is a possible threat. It's a previously unpublicized flaw that threatens the security of millions of PCs that may still have Java running. So the advice about disabling Java was repeated Monday, even after the patch was made available to users. So an enterprising black hat is peddling a new zero-day vulnerability for the latest version of Java, version 7 update 11, to up to two buyers at $5,000 each. Both weaponized and source code versions of the vulnerability were being offered by the seller, according to security blogger Brian Krebs, who discovered the offer on an exclusive cybercrime forum. And obviously it's not a forum about cybercrime. It is a forum that helps you commit cybercrime. Since Krebs discovered the offer, he said it's been removed from the crime forum, suggesting the seller found his buyers. So this one is worse than the last one because nobody knows what it is. In the flaw patched Sunday, the exploit code was identified by security researchers in some popular malware kits. With the latest flaw, it's only known to the seller. So the exploitation will remain unknown for a longer time frame, which increases the attacker's window of opportunity. It's like, ouch. And, of course, the other piece is that even with the patch pushed by Oracle, cyber criminals continue to exploit that same vulnerability on unpatched machines to install ransomware. So, let's see, in addition to addressing the zero-day vulnerability, the other one, not the new one, in Sunday's patch, Oracle also boosted Java's security setting to high by default. That means that right now the user has to authorize the execution of Java applets that are not signed with a valid certificate. While that's a great move towards more security for Java, it's not going to really, you know, it still leaves you wide open for a lot of problems. So who knows? This may be, I think that Java may be circling the drain when the government is recommending you disable it and get rid of it repeatedly and new vulnerabilities keep showing up. That's not a great sign for your future. Here's this one. Some people just have all the bad luck. You know, on an iPhone, there's a thing called Find My Phone. And so your cell phone gets taken, and you can use this. I think other cell phones have it. I'm not sure if it's just iPhones. I think it's lost cell phones. There's various software. The one I'm familiar with is the iPhone has Find My Phone, and it will tell you where your phone is. And there is a glitch in it on Sprint, and a guy named Wayne Dobson, who lives in Las Vegas, suddenly now has people turning up at his door demanding that he give them their cell phones back. He doesn't have their cell phone. He doesn't even own a cell phone. But he's at the end of an impossible GPS glitch that makes Sprint customers believe their cell phones are on his property. You know, it's not fun for this guy to open his door and have people begging for their phone back because it has intimate family pictures or merely intimate pictures. Although it got bad in December when four young people showed up at 2:30 a.m. with menace aforethought, they were in possession of an app that told them for sure that this guy had one of their phones. Then there was a police officer at 4 a.m. Who believed a 911 call reporting potential domestic violence had come from his house, which he'd gotten the information on where it was from Sprint. So for some reason, they don't know why. Nobody is saying why this guy seems to, his thing comes up for where people's phones are gone and this kind of locator stuff for, you know, for emergency calls. And so now, you know, this guy, he really dreads answering his front door because they don't know if it's a tower. Is there something wrong with the local cell tower near him? Is it software? Is it Sprint software? But, you know, imagine that. You know, you do the find your phone thing and you figure you've caught whoever's done it and you find a house at the place where it says you are and then, no, it's some poor sap who just happened to answer the door. In better news, Microsoft teased the Surface Pro today, hinting that the company will soon announce an on-sale date for its second tablet. Panay, the general manager of Microsoft Surface line, tweeted today, quote, on my way to the factory to check out Pound Surface Pro coming off the line, arriving in the coming weeks. Although Microsoft has not set a ship date for Surface Pro, last fall it said that the tablet would come out approximately 90 days after the October 26th debut of the Surface RT sibling. That timetable would put Surface Pro out next week. Microsoft's not refreshed the Surface Pro page with any new information on the model. It simply continues to state coming in early 2013. You know, the Surface Pro is the is Windows 8 Pro and powered by an Intel processor. The Surface RT is more of a iPad-esque device as far as, you know, being kind of detuned. And it has reportedly sold a disappointing 1 million units since its October launch. There's a lot more anticipation on Surface Pro. Now, the pricing for Surface Pro is about $900 with 64 gigs of storage space and $1,000 for 128 gigs. It has the Microsoft Touch Cover and Type Cover are separate, so you add those on and you're up way up into serious laptop territory. That's like $120-$130 for each of those. If Microsoft follows the pattern it's set for Surface RT, the company will announce the on-sale date and begin taking pre-orders 10 days before it launches. However, the 90-day mark, although they did say approximately, and this is Microsoft, the 90-day mark would be January 24th, which is only 8 days from now. The Surface RT was initially only sold through Microsoft's online store and at its retail chain. They later expanded sales to Best Buy and Staples. The pop-up stores that they put up with the Surface RT and that are staying open for the next few months, so there should be more locations for potential customers to buy the Surface Pro if you're interested in that when it comes out. And then this week, there was an odd thing. The Wall Street Journal reported that Apple is cutting back orders for the components needed to assemble the iPhone 5, said that it followed weaker than projected demand. You know, so they were trying to claim that Apple's, there seems to be right now, we're in the phase of things, and I guess time of the year, where everything reported about Apple is bad. Now, you know, Apple gets burned. They either get over-optimistically reported when they're, you know, about to announce something and so the new phone will hover and, you know, transport you through space and time, or all that rumory stuff. And so then the stock price is crazy and all the news is all good. And that's undeserved. And then after stuff is out and when it's a quiet time, then you get the, like, slam-type stories about them that, in the most part, are equally undeserved, or Apple's not the only one that they should be focusing on. But so, Wall Street Journal, they did cite sources close to Apple, but they were there, you know, it affected the company's stock, dropped 3% following the somewhat shocking report, which came a little more than a week before Apple's next earnings announcement. The deal is Apple apparently is cutting iPhone 5 parts orders, but that's because of seasonal, you know, they ramped up for the holidays and now it's a different season and so they're ramping down. Another possibility is that they're starting production on their next handset, perhaps an iPhone 5S or a budget iPhone. You know, so there's a lot of reasons for this stuff. You know, the iPhone 5 may not be selling as briskly as predecessors. I mean, obviously you get people who already have iPhones that are happy with them. But the sad thing is the stuff where these people are talking about how it's really falling apart for Apple and they're not selling very many, etc. Their numbers and their profits are still radically. CNET had a lot of stories about the Samsung phones, and you're not talking. The numbers are not. It's not close. Samsung is not selling as many as that, and they're certainly not making money like Apple does off the iPhone. That's the major competitor. The Galaxy S3 smartphone is a major competitor to Apple, but it's not, the weird thing is this deal where it hasn't sold. It's not that competitive with it. It is a competitor. It's the major competitor, but it is not outselling the iPhone. It's not seemingly cutting deep into its market share or any of that stuff. It's just very, it's just the usual thing, which is, is Apple going to fail now? Now they're going to come apart and their stock price will fall and they'll be smaller than Exxon again and blah, blah, blah. It's just interesting that an outfit like the Wall Street Journal would jump in to jump to these kind of conclusions when it doesn't necessarily seem to be merited. There doesn't seem to be proof. So, thought that one was interesting. But speaking of Apple stuff, there's a guy named, Ming Chi Kuo, who has a very good track record predicting what Apple's gonna do. has a new research report out. So this is rumors, but since he's an analyst and it's a research report, then it doesn't sound quite so, it's not like some guy who pulled it out of his back pocket or thereabouts. This guy at least has some kind of track record. What he says is that Apple will focus its launches on the third quarter of this year with a number of updates throughout the company's various product families. There's nothing really dramatic in his stuff. He expects that Apple will introduce both an iPhone 5S and a revamped iPhone 5 around June or July, with the iPhone 5S appearing. You know, this is stuff that is not a surprise. I mean, if you look at the iPhone 3 and the 3GS, the iPhone 4 and the 4S, that this pattern, you know, he's not out on a limb on that one. The iPhone 5, he's thinking maybe that they may go to lower the price. This one's more interesting, that they may, to lower the price of the iPhone 5, that they may go with a lower version that's in plastic and slightly thicker so that the price is lower, so they don't have to use the kind of, the kind of extra proprietary parts to make that. He figures that iPad and iPad mini will get updated in the third quarter, later in the year, with the iPad mini gaining a Retina display as the most notable change. He thinks that the full-size iPad will get more like the iPad mini, that it'll be slimmer and lighter and have the thinner side bezels like the iPad mini does. He thinks that the MacBook Pro line will go to all Retina displays. He's not sure. He predicts that the MacBook Air won't get a Retina display because of their thickness. So that may be waiting. And he does not see Retina displays on like the iMacs. I guess I can see why there's not an issue on that. He figures that Apple will discontinue the fourth generation iPod Touch. Which right now, if you're interested in an iPod Touch, especially if you don't care if it's the fourth generation or not, the refurb store has them for pretty cheap. They have like the 8 gig, I think, for around $130. So if you want something like that, if you don't want an iPhone, but you want the kind of iPhone looking device, that could work. Once the fourth gen is discontinued, he thinks that Apple will introduce a scaled back fifth generation model with 8 gigs of storage and no rear camera for around $200, just to keep them in the market down in that step of the, that part of the cost. And Apple TV, he doesn't think that there's any kind of big updates to, this is the Apple TV box, not the television set, and he doesn't say anything about the TV set. So these rumors, at least his sound, they seem to me to be fairly conservative and fairly straightforward and probably thus fairly likely to actually happen. So that's the Apple stuff. There's no new good, cool rumors. I mean, it's getting tougher, even if you just make stuff up, to come up with really good ones. Unless you just get, people know you've gone beyond reality. Good news for people who want the Nexus 7 tablet and want to use it with a T-Mobile SIM. That's been added at the Google Play Store, where it basically costs you the same as the regular HSPA Plus model. Also, T-Mobile's confirmed that it's expanding retail availability for the Nexus 4. That rollout began yesterday, and the carrier says all retail locations in the U.S. should have the tablet in store within the coming weeks. And you'll be able to order it from T-Mobile's website next week. So more options for getting the Nexus besides, there's Google Play, but also now T-Mobile is added to that. And finally, on new stuff, this one's interesting. The you've heard of, I think you may remember, we've talked about the Chromebox. Samsung has the Chromebox, which is, if you think about it, it's like a Mac Mini, but for Google, for Chrome, for for that operating system. And Samsung has updated it significantly. Before, it had a Celeron B B840 processor, where the new one has a Core i5 chip in it. You know, both CPUs are based on the Sandy Bridge architecture, but the Core i5 is a lot faster. It runs with four cores instead of just two. Two of them are physical and two are virtual. Scales to 2.5 gigahertz to 3.1 gigahertz versus the 1.9 gigahertz on the other one. Has a bigger cache, and it runs on the same amount of power. What makes this processor an interesting choice is it has a relatively high price. The Chromebox, the MSRP is about $500, but it sounds like there's heavy discounts because from Intel to allow them to keep the price the same. Because the CPU in the Chromebox is very similar to the CPU Apple offers in the base $600 Mac Mini. Remember, I said the MSRP was $499, and actually. Right now, well, the other change is they upgraded the processor. It comes with 4 gigs of RAM, a 16-gig flash storage drive, 6 USB 2.0 ports, Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, Ethernet, as well as DisplayPort and DVI interfaces. And then it appears they've already dropped the price of the new Chromebox. So it's the MSRP is $499, but it sounds like you can find it now from about $400. So, as a, you know, I wouldn't, it's not a substitute for a Mac Mini, but the Chromebox could be very interesting to add, you know, hook it up to a monitor and put it alongside if you're working from a desktop, hook it up and run it alongside and use the Chrome OS for some tasks and, take those off your, you know, main desktop, and then you also kind of get the multi-operating system and all that fun stuff, and you get to try it for fairly cheap. $400 isn't bad for that kind of device, and if you're interested in playing around with the Chrome stuff, that lets you do it at your desk. And that's the news.
All right. So turn off your Java, everybody. Turn off your Java.
I think Java's always been unsafe like that. It's just people are just now kind of cluing into it.
Yeah.
Well, this sounds like, though, there's the exploits, though, seem to be getting worse.
Yeah, worse. Much worse. How many times I've had to clean spyware off of my coworkers' computers. I mean, it's already bad. It's but all of a sudden now the major media's picking up on it and trying to see, I think, get a handle on where it's coming from, you know, where the vulnerabilities, they're starting to talk about the vulnerabilities more, a little bit more specific. I had a lot of people email me this week because of the major news coverage on the Java exploit, and it's like, well, it's always kind of been a problem.
Yeah, well, just by definition, the whole runs on lots of hardware, you know, write once, run in any place, that sounds a lot like the ideal description of a virus, you know?
And really, increasingly, vectors for malware are not the operating systems or the browsers, but things that you plug into the operating system or things that you plug into the browser. They are things that, you know, that people don't pay that much attention to until it's kind of too late. And that's the case with Java.
Well, and for a long time, the operating system producers, there are openings through the browser and some of that stuff where Java wasn't sandboxed well and was allowed kind of same user rights as whoever was running the computer that was looking at it, and that's not good.
Yes.
Can I talk for just a second about jargon that I don't like?
Jargon you don't like.
Jargon okay. You don't like with Flicted.
Flicted's gripes.
This one's been around for a few months, but it seems like I've heard it more, and it annoys me. So I guess people wanted, probably salesmen wanted to sound more intelligent or complex or something when they were speaking. Somebody did. I'm sure it was probably from managers or salespeople.
Is this beyond the cloud?
Yes. They started using the word on-premises, off-premises. instead of on-site, off-site, or local, non-local, whatever.
Insourced, outsourced.
But that wasn't, that wasn't cool enough, though, and it was too long. So now there's all these people that are starting to say on-prem and off-prem. And I hear that a lot now from both where I work and people who come into where I work. And I want to punch people every time I hear that.
Yes, you do.
I mean, because the thing is, look, it sounds stupid. And if you want to say that, you want to say the concept of on-premises, but that's just too many syllables, then say on-site, because that word already exists. It's a real word, and it means the same thing. Anyway, that's my gripe.
Tell them they sound like a drunken nanny. What's this on-prem that you're talking about?
I have to push the pram a lot.
Why don't they just shorten it even more and just say ons and offs, or onsies and offsies?
Onsies and offsies. It's either or O and O.
I like here and there.
Or you can tell them you prefer up yours and down yours. Tell them you'll let them in on the geek secret. Yeah, we don't say on-prem anymore. We say up yours.
One and zero.
There you go.
You know, there's a certain people that like jargon that they go away to conferences and they come back and they speak new jargon that they picked up at the conferences and stuff.
It's kind of like people that go to comic conferences and come back speaking Klingon, so they think.
A few years ago, you know, a big thing was you couldn't call anything a problem. You had to call everything an opportunity, which also annoyed me horribly because sometimes, you know, really it is a problem and you need to fix it. And it may be an opportunity for you to shine, but that doesn't make it not a problem. Anyway... So,
I prefer you to think of those kind of opportunities as flopportunities.
Well, a couple of us decided we were going to try to get some people to do that. We were going to start saying, we need to tap that opportunity.
Back that opportunity up.
Well, and then after we got, you know, that kind of into the jargon, then we were just going to drop opportunity and see if we can get that to stick so that in meetings, you know, the person be like, look, guys, we got to tap that. But we didn't really ever try to do that. But it was a funny idea.
Yeah, it seems like that's just some low-hanging fruit there. Picking the low-hanging fruit. Which reminds me, I had a great conversation. You know, the company that I work for merged with another company that's a big name in technology. And, you know, I sense that occasionally that there's some friction there, you know, that, you know, they think
like
they're
culture.
Culture friction because they think, you know, they are credible and they don't think we're credible.
Y'all are the fly-by-night loons.
Yeah, probably vice versa, too. But so I was helping this guy out from that company, Access Resources, and our company, because we have two different kinds of technological architectures that don't play well together. So you have to understand certain things to be able to go from your environment to come into our environment. And so this guy was basically lecturing me while I was trying to help him gain access to our resources and about how, you know, this merger is a great step backwards and so forth, and I quipped, you know, or step forward depending on your point of view. But he's like, and then he just went off on this diatribe about, you know, how much what we're doing now kind of sucks as compared to what they were doing before the merger. And at any rate, I tried to just ignore that as much as I possibly could, but it came to the point where the solution was that he had to go, and he had never deployed that architecture's VPN client, which was necessary to be able to bridge this gap to make where he could work, because he works at a home office. So I said, well, look, all this aside, if you want to access this, you're going to have to go to your company's deployment server and get the VPN client. And I said, I'll wait. And so 15 minutes later, it had failed to download for him three or four times, and he couldn't get it downloaded. This is all their architecture, all their stuff. I said, yeah, I appreciate that. Could be very frustrating, you know, and I've heard that there have been some problems with that, and I mean, sorry that you're having so much trouble, and I got to let you go now. You'll have to talk with your people about why you can't get your thing. It's just maddening when people want to editorialize about stuff. I mean, when they're in the middle of solving a problem. So I have the same problem when people write me either for the radio show or through their Houston Chronicle. They want to throw in this stuff about it's a conspiracy by Microsoft to sell more of their operating system, or you know, obviously I'm being targeted. It's just I don't care. I don't care about the politics. I don't care about that jargon and all that nonsense where people are trying to demonstrate some kind of knowledge that they don't have. So let's just solve the problem. Let's just fix it. And speaking of fixing problems, I see people are on hold. Yes. And I understand, Groovehouse, that you talked to somebody who cleared up the expert situation for us, or the...
Yes, I did.
Are you turned on? Your microphone? Are you as turned on as I am?
I get excited when I do the show, but...
Line up the next call. We got to tap that.
Groovehouse is going to tap line one.
Yeah, we can do that.
No, I was going to say, somebody called because we were talking about whether Michio Kaku was an expert or...
Yes, they called.
And they called. White Wolf called.
And I tried to remember, and he'll be upset that I didn't fully remember, and thus I didn't want to be asked because I had forgotten.
Well, he said that he's not an expert.
He's an authority.
An authority.
Right.
Because nobody wants to be an expert because X is in the past.
Right.
And spurt is just something that dribbles.
Right.
A pro port.
And everyone wants to knock down an expert. Everybody wants to build on an authority. Right.
Or something like that. Something. So very profound and dished out to Groovehouse when he's in not a very good position to take it all in. But he related it to me. And
as best I could.
So we are not experts. Or are we? Are we the authorities? I don't know.
But I don't want to be the authority because I don't like authority.
I respect your authority.
You fight authority, and authority always wins.
Did you lift that to him? Did you say you fight authority?
You fight authority. You fight.
The T in fight is just fight authority. That's what I'm hearing.
Oh. It's your headphones.
All right. Sorry, putting Groovehouse on the spot too much in the first part of the show, which is not fair.
John Cougar right. Lyric.
Have you seen that commercial for with the Eddie Money singing Two Tickets to Paradise? God, that is so horrible.
It is horrible.
He sounds really bad.
Yeah. He's probably pushing 70.
Yeah. I don't know. All right, Groovehouse.
Yes.
I see we have people in the queue. Who are they? What do they want?
We have several people in the queue, but first up on the show. Yes, we're good. Okay.
Good, are we?
Yeah, I think so. We're going to do a show. All right, so first up on the show, we're going to speak with Gary.
Gary, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hello, I have two basic, simple questions. I'm on dial-up out here in the country, and it's terribly slow.
Terribly, terribly.
But I noticed that about 4 o'clock in the afternoon and 7 o'clock in the evening, it just tanks. And I'm wondering, does this reflect maybe every little snot-nosed kid or person coming home from school or after dinner going on their computer to go to Facebook, and it affects the servers, which impact my access? I mean, I can't even get Google up. I go on in the 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and my computer's okay. My computer works fine. I have an antique computer, but all my systems work, my Word and all my access to your documents. But then when I go on the Internet, it's working, and then at 4 o'clock, it just tanks. So my question is, does this reflect the traffic that's going on the server?
Well, let me, first of all, thank you for transporting me back to a point.
But wait, I have a more important question.
Well, now let's address this question first, since you brought it up, and since I'm now channeling Jay Lee, the internet service provider tech support manager from 1995, 96, when everybody was on dial-up and that's all there was. There are two things that are probably, that are potentially affecting you. One is, yes, there may be, who is your internet provider?
Oh, God bless AT&T, those sons of, well, never
so,
mind.
Do you live in a neighborhood that has any population and
well, no, I live in a small town, I live in Waller, and okay. I live on 10 acres, and it's all country.
So it's not like everybody in your area is, you know, I mean, people that are accessing those servers are probably not necessarily accessing it on dial-up.
But wait, our AT&T servers are in Hempstead, which is even farther out, so I'm guessing that everybody in this area and everybody out there are all going through that same system. So,
but a lot of those people are going to be accessing. But a lot of those people are going to be accessing that system via high-speed internet through DSL and so forth.
Oh no, there's no such a thing out here.
No such thing out there.
We don't even have cable. I mean, if you don't have a satellite, you're screwed.
Well,
I mean, that's what I'm thinking. Everybody out here is on dial-up, so I think everybody's going to the same servers. And as more and more and more people get on the servers and sign up for Facebook or whatever, that it's affecting the capacity, the capability of the servers.
It's quite possible that that's true. There's also another thing that's possible that I've seen when dealing with dial-up is that the way that the phone company routes phone lines changes at different times of the day, so they may be routing you through a phone switch that's got some problems.
Really? Okay, that's interesting.
So
depending
on the traffic on
my computer, I have an old Dell XPS 410. It's about 7 years old, and I was just hoping my computer wasn't crapping out. Now, my other question, which is more important, is all my friends are saying to resolve this problem, I need to buy an iPhone. And so I'm out here in the sticks, and I'm wondering: do you have access to the signals? Is it a cell phone tower? I can see a cell phone tower from my backyard, or do I need to buy one of those Wi-Fi transponders with the little antenna and everything? Or can I just go out and buy an iPhone and get instant access?
I don't know what. Well, first of all, if you get an iPhone and you get it through AT&T or Verizon, you're going to be limited on your data. So it's not a good solution for full-time internet connection because you can pay through the nose if you exceed your, you know, it'll throttle you or you won't have, you have to pay extra if you go over your cap. The other question is whether or not, I would imagine there might be 3G coverage where you are. There wouldn't probably be 4G coverage where you are.
Okay, well, but you hear all about how so many people in rural areas cannot receive, you know, can't get internet wireless access. And is that a cell phone thing or is that just a distance thing?
It's a cell phone coverage thing. It's distance from a tower. So if you say you see one from where you live, then you might have a good signal. But the question is whether or not that tower's been outfitted for high-speed data or not.
Some are and some are not.
Some are just repeaters just to get the phone calls across that area. They may not be set up to transmit data.
Where exactly are you?
I'm in Waller.
But our AT&T
servers are in Hempstead, which is another 20 miles farther.
But that's
out.
Not going to affect your coverage.
Yeah. You can go to both AT&T and Verizon's websites, and they have coverage maps that will show you where their data coverage is and their voice coverage. It will be approximate, but you could zoom in a lot of cases and see. You can see exactly where they are, so that might help you.
Okay, my last question to. That guy from San Antonio just say that Oracle bought the Bond system?
Pete?
So you know what Bond is, right?
The German company?
Well, yeah, and they used, where I used to work, we used their system. We replaced it. We replaced the IBM 4000 system, and it's so huge and complicated. I can't believe Oracle would, you know, I mean, that's like eating an elephant.
Hmm.
It's Java. They bought.
Why is Pete so quiet? Can we do anything about that? Flicted?
Well, you know about Bahn, B-A-A-N. It's German. It's a humongous system. I mean, they had 10,000 different selections. In my company, it was three times bigger than the IBM system we had. And I thought he said that Oracle bought Bahn, and I'm thinking, oh,
Pete,
well,
did they be? Is that the same Bahn?
He bought Sun.
Sun. I'm sorry. Can we get Flicted's attention somehow, or can we do anything with that? Probably not.
Flicted's been looking at it since before you started asking Flicted to look at it.
Okay,
he's busy looking at it.
Sorry, I couldn't tell. You know, waving, acknowledging I'm doing something. You look like I couldn't tell.
I was laser focused.
There, I muted the chat thing, and now I'm on the regular phone. And okay. So Oracle bought Sun a few years ago, and of course, along with Sun comes Java.
He probably said Sun and not Bahn. And I misunderstood.
He did. He said Sun, not Bahn.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. You've been very helpful, guys.
All right. Good luck. Thanks for your call.
Good night.
Good night.
Matt, we're trying to experiment. Sorry.
He ported you over to. What was going on?
Well, so we're going to try Google Talk, except instead of through the browser, we're going to do it through Messages, which is Apple's new messaging client that you can do different types of services through. It's basically like Trillion, except it's made by Apple. And so I'm doing audio over it. And so it doesn't sound like it's getting all the breakup and stuff that like Google Talk was doing through the web browser. However, it's really quiet. And I don't know why it's so quiet.
Okay.
There is I don't know if you're seeing, do you have there's a pop-up window that for the audio chat, and it has, mine shows a volume slider. Is that maybe low?
Yeah, all the way to the right. It's all the way up.
Weird.
So someone called in and said that DSL is available in Waller, although if they're spread out and he's out in the boonies, it might not be. I know that they definitely have satellite coverage, so if Gary's still listening, you can definitely get faster than dial-up just by getting a satellite connection out there.
I'm sure there's a lot of places that are too far from the CO to get DSL. You have to be within
like
a certain number.
About a mile, like 15,000 feet.
If you own any property, you kind of distance yourself from the CO just with your acreage.
The satellite's an option out there. There's actually a Waller satellite service. There's HughesNet. There's a number of providers. So he would still use his phone line to send data up to make requests, but then whatever he wants to, you know, stream or whatever, he'd come down over the satellite connection.
All right. 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with us. We are approaching the top of our first hour of programming as Flicted laser focuses on the communication system. He's like a shark with a laser on his head. All right, Groove House.
Yes.
Who's up?
All right, up next, we're going to speak with Don.
Don, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Yes, sir. Hey, I have a Magellan Navigator that I try to connect to their website to update the maps and the software using two different Windows 7 machines, and they both have an i3 processor, and it will not connect. Now, it so happens I have a Vista and a Toshiba laptop that's much older, and it connects fine through that. And, of course, this is an older machine, so it can disappear any day. And I want to be able to connect through the Windows 7s. I've talked to Magellan twice. They even sent me a refurbished Navigator, and I still cannot connect to their system anyway.
Do they walk you through? Do you know if it connects over USB or is it an old serial connection?
It's a USB.
And do they walk you through getting the virtual COM ports up on Windows 7? I'm assuming it's going to need one of those to talk to it.
No, they didn't go through that.
Did they troubleshoot it at all?
No.
With you? They just sent you out a new version?
Yeah.
Did it ever work with your Windows 7 computer?
No. Now, it works with my friends.
With your friends' Windows 7 computer?
Yeah. And the only difference in the machine, he has a, his processor is a...
I don't think it has anything to do with the processor.
No. Have you gone to go get the drivers first, install the drivers for Magellan?
Yep. Like, yep.
So you got Magellan Roadmate.
Does it detect the device?
Not really. When I plug it in, you could hear it make that noise, you know, the bing-bong noise.
Okay, so it senses something's there.
It senses something there, but if you go to the, you know, the file, my computer and whatnot, it doesn't show it.
Okay, so it's not showing up in the device. So it's not successfully installing the driver and mounting the device.
Yeah, it's not there, but have you gone to system just to see if it's an unknown USB device or something?
Yeah, that's what I think. Go to the device manager, and do you have any yellow exclamation points or question marks there?
No.
No. Do you see the Magellan at all?
Nope.
Something's not giving. Do any COM ports, like if you unplug it, and it may not show up under as a Magellan device, but when you plug it back in, you might get like a COM 8 or like an extra COM. Do you know what I'm talking about? Like the serial connections?
Well, I never saw or never looked for a COM. I mean, I remember the old days you'd have COM connections.
They still let devices talk that way. It's just kind of over the virtual COM port. A lot of times you don't see it because Windows 7 is supposed to build those in the background. But it's weird that you would plug it in, you'd get the, you know, the notification sound that it's detected a USB device, and then it doesn't show up anywhere under your system profile. It should show up somewhere in there.
Some GPSs show up as storage because they have the ability to store data separate from the GPS maps.
Well, it will show up on the device manager under the Universal Serial Bus Controllers.
Right.
As a USB mass storage device.
Right.
Right.
But that's all it does. If I go to file, you know, the file manager, it does not appear.
Have you tried reinstalling different drivers and pointing it to the directory where you downloaded the Magellan software?
If it
finds a USB driver that it's happy with, it's probably not going to keep looking for other ones. So if it pulls a mass storage device first, you might want to try the drivers and go in and say, like, reinstall new driver, actually uninstall the device, and then try and select a driver and point it to one of the Magellan drivers so you can get off either. It looks like the Microsoft site has them, and the Magellan site has them, too.
Well, I mean, yeah, I've never found a driver by name. I mean, I installed Magellan.
But have you gone to the Magellan site and see if they have anything to download that you could download to your PC and then...
Yep, I mean, they have a thing they call Content Manager.
What's the model number of...
We're getting close to where we're going to have to take a short break and do some station business here, so we may have to put you on hold before if we're going to keep talking about this. But I think the idea is that what Barrett says, you could do an update on the driver... I don't know if that works in Windows 7 or not, where you can tell it that I have my own...
I believe you can, because I do that on mine.
Yeah.
It's still
but I don't know where to find any drivers for it. Magellan well, sure
if you tell me the model number, we can have that when we come back for you, maybe.
Okay.
All right, if you want to hold on, we can put you on hold and come back to you when we get done with Barrett time and the station break.
Okay.
All right, thanks.
Hold.
All right, so, and we still have Pete. All right. Well, you're listening to technology...
Messages? Is this better?
That sounds good.
Yeah, that sounds better.
All right. Well, you're listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
Inflicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
And he's
Groove House.
We'll be right back after these messages.
Welcome. This is Dr. Michio Kaku, professor of theoretical physics at the City College and the Graduate Center of the City University of New York. And
it's stimulating, mind-expanding, safer to use than alcohol. It's the in thing.
KPFT's new arts and culture lineup features some great programming 6 to 7 p.m. weekdays. The inspiring mix includes blues and hi-fi on Mondays, Nuestra Palabra on Tuesdays, and Living Art on Thursdays. In addition, our newest schedule change features the return of old favorites, World Music Express with Harrison Kumi, Fridays at 6 p.m., followed by Health Matters with Dr. Alexandra Samotis at 7. Tune in on Monday mornings at 6 for Counterspin. Vegan World Radio has a new home, Tuesdays at 8 p.m., while Exploration with Dr. Michio Kaku now follows Technology Bites at 10 p.m. on Wednesdays. For our complete program schedule, visit kpft.org. This is KPFT Houston.
Please join us for the Black Heritage Society Martin Luther King Jr. Birthday Celebration and Community Festival at Discovery Green in downtown Houston, Monday, January the 21st at 10 a.m. following the annual Martin Luther King Jr. Parade. There will be music and entertainment, food, arts and crafts for both adults and children. Interested vendors and participants may visit the website at www.blackheritagesociety.org or call 713-236-1700.
90.1 KPFT Houston.
Hey, Barrett, what's happening?
I don't know.
Well, room around town.
We interrupt this skit to bring you
Barrett Time! Barrett Time! Barrett Time!
Yeah. That means it's time for
Barrett Time!
Anyway, take it away, Barrett.
All right. It's T-minus 3 days until the Houston Mini Maker Fair takes flight at the Stafford Center Performing Arts Theater and Convention Center. The long-winded and large brick and glass structure in Southwest Houston will be home to myriad of local makers from 10 in the morning until 6 p.m. this coming Saturday, January 19th. And against my better judgment, I'm going to try and take a run through all the sights and sounds you can see this Saturday. Here goes. 3D printing with MakerBot, Action Figure Labs, an ample amount of Arduinos, BusyBots, the Children's Museum of Houston will be there, multiple creator space exhibitions, early robotics, e-textiles, Nerf gun, fabrication and modification, Lone Star Hovercraft, Lone Star EV Racing, the RepRap homemade 3D printer, you can make your own infinity mirror, you can learn how to make your own soap, hopefully this doesn't involve anyone named Tyler, Mate Robotics will be there, not Mate Robotics, although there should be enough robots there that a couple of them are bound to interface, and let's see, what's the next one? Oh, yeah, Memory Stones. Miniature engines will be there. Model Warship Combat. There will be jewelry, Neobots, knitting, RC submarines. I'm not sure whether or not the Model Warship Combat guys are aware of this yet. R2-D2 and Astromech robots. You can never have enough R2-D2 robots in one, in the same room. Repcon stuff. The Rice Solar Car. That's a car powered by solar radiation, not the seeds of a monocot. As well as multiple other exhibitions by Rice University, like the Rice Kids Learning Project. You've also got Robotics Shooting High, Ruminate, Ships and Bottles. I assume the bottles are to shield attacks from the Model Warship Combat guys and the RC submarines. You've got the Sashimi Tabernacle Choir, a music video search engine, intelligent lighting, and not to be undone by the big kids, St. John's School will also be showing off their own SEMA car. There'll be Team Spectrum Robotics, a lot of Legos, TXRX Labs, and finally, a vertical access wind turbine. Throw in an ample amount of food trucks and some of the co-hosts from Technology Bites representing the Geek Gathering. And let me format my line there. And you've got a pretty good start to your weekend. You can purchase tickets online at makerfairhouston.com. That's F-A-I-R-E. You can also get your tickets at the door starting at 9:45 in the morning. Doors open at 10. A series of talks will be going on throughout the day, and a handful of local makers will be set up as vendors offering their wares for sale. There will be a Geek Gathering booth at the fair where KD5, a.k.a. David Brummel, and I will be setting up shop first Friday night of the month style. We'll be bringing in our Arduino Army, a robotic Camarasaurus, a lot of LEDs, multiple microcontrollers, and a right plethora of Raspberry Pis. Jay Lee Flicted and Dwight may also be stopping by, so be sure to stop by and say hi if you're able to attend. Again, that's MakerFairHouston.com. And that's it for your array of Maker Faire activities, and that's that for Barrett time.
There's going to be an R2 unit out there?
Yeah.
Wow.
We're going to hopefully repair it.
Wow.
The one in San Francisco, there was actually a number of R2 units, and they were large. They were like life size. They were real R2 size.
Wow.
And we had them kind of like barricaded off, because at that point, 300 pounds of metal can hurt somebody.
Did they have a real person inside of them?
No. They
angry midgets. Awesome.
They forgot to take them out in 1976.
No, that is sad. They did leave them in overnight, a couple of nights for the weekend, because I think it was a three-day deal. I don't think they would let them out. R2 smelled pretty ripe by Sunday afternoon. Huh. But yeah, I think there'll be at least one or two out. They're pretty cool.
Barrett's going to try to get inside of one of them. All right.
So during the break there, we got everybody got a free 30-second preview of the
next show.
Of the Exploration show.
Yes.
What's that, R2? Leia fell in the well. Oh, no.
It's a trap.
It's a trap.
All right, well, let's go back to the call that we have on the queue or, that we were holding on to. The Magellan guy. All right.
I'm here.
Yeah, you're there. Okay. So back to the Magellan question. So you have the device. It shows up in the device manager's mass storage. And what Barrett was suggesting, I believe, was that because the computer has identified the device as a thing, it's not identifying it as the correct thing. So the idea is to update the drivers with Magellan drivers, which should be offered on their website.
If you give me the model number, we can tell you definitely yes, there is, or no, there is not a driver for Windows 7. Do you have that handy?
Yes.
Yes?
3045.
3045.
Yeah, LM, but that's...
So, yes, let's see. Ooh, go ahead and see what you got. The new... Now, is your computer running Windows 7? Is it 64-bit or 32-bit?
64.
Is your friends that sees it and works, is his 32-bit or 64-bit?
I'm pretty sure 64.
Pretty sure? So I think there might be some question as to whether or not the 64-bit Windows 7 will see it. But let's see. Magellan does have a support site where they offer drivers for download, and I'm going there to look to see if they... Did you see any Windows 7?
Not on their site yet. I'm still looking. So 3045LM.
I did a search on just a general online search, and about 2 years ago, people were asking this question, and they never seemed to get any resolution, and then the question disappeared.
Yeah, I'm wondering if it's a 64, 32-bit thing. Windows 7 cannot find a driver for my GPS. Da, da, da. Yeah, it's. I would say putting together some Google searches. It sounds like you have, but another thing you might try to do is in the device manager is uninstall. You know, find the Magellan as a USB mass storage device, right-click it, uninstall it, and then let the system re-detect it.
I did that, too.
And it, okay. So go ahead.
Three little things come up, and I forget what all I have to say, but one of them says the driver did not install.
Okay.
Two of the three install, and the third one...
And that's probably the one that you need to make it work to where your system can see it as... the GPS and be able to update the software. So if your friend's computer works, can you update it on his PC?
Yes.
How many times do you have to update the Magellan software?
Like every quarter. That's when they put in new maps.
How good of a friend is he?
Well, you know, as long as my Vista machine lasts, you know, I'm okay.
So it works on your Vista machine. Is your Vista machine 32-bit or 64-bit?
32.
So I'm thinking it's a 32 versus 64-bit. It would not surprise me to learn that there are not 64-bit drivers for this device. Now, so, I mean, I've seen it happen before where 64-bit operating system is just not supported for older devices. And I would check with your friend to make sure if his is 32-bit, then that's probably what you're facing. So there just is not a 64-bit support for this device. How old is it?
Oh, about a year.
About a year. So they actually did send. Have you talked to them? Have you gone back on the phone to talk to them and say, I'm having trouble making this work with my Windows 7 computer. Can you walk me through what I need to do?
We didn't walk through it. But I talked to them. And they, like I say, the first time I talked to them, they sent me a new machine.
Okay, so I could call them back and say the new machine hasn't fixed the problem. And
I did
see-
that.
Huh?
And I did that.
And what'd they say?
Gee, how about that? And they were going to pass it up the line to their next tier. And I haven't, it's been over a week and I haven't heard from them.
Well, do you have a ticket number on it?
Yeah.
Pursue it. I mean, those guys are going to know more about their equipment than we are. You know, we're just kind of floundering here, and I appreciate your confidence in us, but I would say you're going to have better luck dealing with the manufacturer on this problem and getting a solution. And it may be that you just need to remind them that you have a ticket open, and that'd probably be a better use of your time.
Yeah, Okay. Well, you're going to greatly disappoint my friend to turn me on to you. He said, those five guys will find an answer.
Well, you bring the computer to the Maker Faire, and is it a laptop?
No.
Oh.
Well, one of them is.
Well,
I would just, on the off chance, I would go through the install directory or whatever kind of download directory that you got the software from and just search for a directory called drivers, just in case there's something there.
Yeah.
Or you can search for like a .inf file or, you know, in any of those. But I'd be kind of surprised if there wasn't a driver in there somewhere.
.inf is?
INF, like information.
Oh, okay.
And what's the other, aren't there two? Is it, it's not OEM. What's the other extension for driver files?
I think INF is
INF is the main one.
Okay. Before you run away, back on the Java issue.
Yeah.
So I tried turning my Java off the other night, and
a lot of stuff broke.
Yeah, it won't work. You know, and some of the sites that my wife holds dear wouldn't run.
That's gonna be the case.
Did you turn Java off or JavaScript?
I turned Java off.
You sure? It was Java, not JavaScript, because Java is not that frequently used across a lot of sites. It's not that common anymore.
Did you disable it in the browser or on the system?
Both.
So his wife probably goes to sites that have Java-based games.
Well, it's Weight Watchers.
There's a lot of Java-enabled sites. So if you disable Java or turn Java off, those sites aren't going to work for you anymore.
Yeah,
I was under the impression that it is fairly rare at this point.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
The thing with the Java situation for me is that there you can turn Java off and still successfully infect your computer with so much spyware you won't be able to see straight. It's out there. So the real key is being careful with what you click on and what you do. So if you go to a legitimate site like Weight Watchers or, you should be fine. But if you go in the more questionable areas of the internet where some of these exploits could be loaded onto the website, then you're going to be in trouble. But that being said, I've seen legitimate websites that have had payloads that are nefarious that will infect a computer.
And that was the case with this particular exploit, is that there were other vulnerabilities in the web-serving software that these people were taking advantage of to cause a poison, to place, poison area on that site. So it can be even sites that have well-known names can be compromised.
Yeah, the sites aren't putting it out there. It's other people gaining access to the servers and then putting that malware out there on the sites. Right. Usually the site owners have no idea it's out there.
One trick, if there's a Java site and you still want to access it, is maybe try putting in mobile dot and then the domain name for that site and see if you can access it through your browser, which would be non-Java, where it looks like you're doing it from a phone or a tablet.
Okay, I'll try that. This same friend, his whole family picks up all kinds of viruses and spyware and garbage that won't, the machines eventually lock up.
Right.
And I never had that kind of trouble. Never.
Surfing habits, probably.
Well, it depends. Some people are more susceptible than others because they tend to click through a different way. Maybe they click on something they think is legit, because a lot of this spyware and viruses come up as, as a warning that looks legitimate, and maybe they click on that and they get it infected, or maybe they're, do you have kids?
No.
Do they have kids?
He does, yeah.
Yeah, well, that'll
definitely.
Because a lot of kids will go out and start downloading whatever they can find. They download all these
games,
chats, and they file sharing stuff.
Music, movies.
And chat rooms.
He said the kids' sites, his 10-year-old granddaughter, she picks up all kinds of garbage.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of my things. Every holiday season, people write to me because they've had their nieces and nephews over, and they've installed all their crazy nonsense on the computer, and so they leave to go back to Michigan or whatever, and their computer is just completely infected with viruses.
I thought it was Care Bear, but it said Share Bear.
My philosophy on that is that you back up your computer frequently and be prepared.
Yeah. Okay.
All right?
Okay.
Sorry to disappoint you. I hope you'll tune back in next week.
Okay, thank you.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
I'm trying to find something on that.
I think we figured out the volume on Pete now.
I think you did.
Really? I did that on purpose.
Yes, I think you can actually probably turn your side down some now. Because then maxed out is like, I mean, but close to that.
Who uses these Magellan things anymore? I guess that's still a popular. I mean, it's just like with all this GPS in your phone now.
When a couple of years ago they were fairly expensive, and I suspect if you bought one of those,
you want to milk it,
right?
Right.
So is this a little better?
That's better.
Yeah.
Cool.
So what's the official setup now? We're going over the Apple servers via Google Voice.
Well, it's
no, using messages, which is Apple's kind of.
It's Google Voice. Over messages instead of through like the web browser chat. I guess I could try like Adium or something to try and help.
I also, it has on some of the settings, you can limit the bandwidth that it has available, and so I put it a little bit lower since it seems to be working, and hopefully that'll help keep the load down for on your end.
All right. 713-526-5738. If you want to be on the air with Technology Bites tonight, we've got open lines and available time. Was that your phone? That
was. I think it might have been Bites.
No, it was not my phone. It's not my phone.
It's your phone, Dwight.
It's not my phone.
I got no messages. No one likes me.
I heard a rant.
Not my phone.
It's R2 unit. There's an R2 unit in here, everybody. Look, here it comes.
Groove House is pranking us.
Pranking.
He's Frankenstein.
He even talks.
Ha ha. It didn't work.
Didn't work. He's not
he
talking.
He tried to trick us. It didn't
prank
work.
You. Prank you on the air.
Prank you very much. All right, so who's
prank
up
you
next?
Very little. Let's see. Okay, well, and we do have open lines, so 713-526-5738.
All right.
If you want to be on the air. Up next on the show, we're going to speak with John.
John, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
I just hooked up a Netgear N300 wireless router. My laptop is approximately 30 feet away in another room. The router has to transmit through one wall only, but the reception or conductivity of my signal is always fair to poor. I move it to a couple more rooms, same. I move the laptop back into the room with the router. It shows that it's excellent. Is there any way to improve the distance, or not the word I want?
Well, you want the range to be range. More, yeah, the yes, signal sir. Strength and the range to be better. First of all, the computer that you're using, is it wireless G or is it wireless N?
And it's a brand new Dell.
Brand new.
Windows 7.
And the Netgear wireless router, is it dual band?
Yeah, boy, you would ask me that. I
would.
It's an N300.
It's a fairly low end.
That's the
router.
very low end, yep. On the Netgear routers. Nothing. I'm not saying anything bad about that, but I do know that if you go up to the dual band on the wireless end, that you get a better range. I upgraded. I had a Netgear 1200N or N1200 or whatever, and I was having some reception problems just a couple of rooms down in my house, and I upgraded to the 4200, and that thing blankets my house with a strong signal.
Wow.
So rather than going down the road of buying a booster or something like that, you might want to consider just getting. How long ago did you buy the router?
Oh, about a month ago from Target, and I don't doubt I can take it back.
Probably not.
Yes,
it's actually is the mid-range router.
That yeah, the 150 I think is the low end. I got the $44 one.
How old is your house?
50 years.
That's what I'm thinking. It sounds like you might have like some. Do you have any stucco or any like?
No.
No kind of chicken wire in the walls to hold on any kind of old plaster or anything like that.
No, sir.
I had a friend of mine who had a very nice house in California, and he had a router upstairs, and he had his computer directly below the router, and he couldn't in another room, and he couldn't get any connection. And what he discovered was in the ceiling above him was a place where all of the wiring for the house came together at one point, and it created basically a barrier for Wi-Fi signals. So there could be something in that wall that's causing your issue, or it just could be, you know, I've had one of these routers, and one of the reasons why I don't have the router anymore is because I thought the range was not very good on it.
Yeah, in fact, I had my neighbor across the street check it out, and she said, yeah, I'm getting a fair to poor also. So the signal had to go through my wall, across the street, through her wall, to her computer. So my laptop, as I said, is only about 30 feet away, transmitting through one wall now.
That being said, fair to poor is still a connection.
Oh, yes, the connection, and I get on the Internet, and just everything's hunky-dory.
If you're just looking at bars, that can be misleading, because you may only have one to two bars or, you know, show medium signal strength. But you're browsing the web lightning fast and everything's going just fine.
Yeah.
You can do a speed test. Like, you can go to speakeasy.net/speed test and do a speed test from there in the same room, and then go to the next room and see if it's a big drop. The nice thing is, yeah, I know you've already sunk money into the N300, but the N300 will do wireless repeating if you did want to pick up either like another cheap N300 or if you want to get something nicer like Jay was talking about. There's a repeater mode where you can actually have it take the signal from an existing access point and then propagate it, make it go a little bit further. So, you know, having two of those in the house and positioning one to where it kind of gets you around the bend and into the other room might be a good deal. But when you do the repeating, you take half your bandwidth is gone, pretty much. You take a hit.
Okay, one other little thing. The router is sitting right next to 3 inches away from my cable modem. It's sitting about 6 inches away from a VCR and about a foot away from a television. Would that have some effect on it, possibly?
Well, if you want to know the answer to that, turn all that stuff off and see if your signal gets stronger.
Yeah.
But yes, it's possible that you're getting some kind of radio interference from other electronic devices.
Yeah.
Do you have a bookshelf you can put the router up on, like up high above everything?
No, but I could work on that, I think. Yeah.
Do that, and then this sounds kind of odd, but sometimes the orientation of the antenna, they're polarized.
They don't have antennas on those.
Oh, the N300 doesn't have two external antennas?
It has internal antennas.
Yeah.
Oh, the picture I looked at had two removable antennas.
No, it's just a
pod. But you can still move the whole thing over, like shift it 90 degrees in the plane and just see if that helps the signal at all.
Because the back of the router is pointing toward my laptop in the other room, so I don't know if the signal comes out the front or the back. I would assume
Try turning it so the side faces, but also try putting it above all the metal and everything in that room.
Above everything. Okay.
Try putting above stuff and try turning all that stuff off and just see, because you could be getting some getting some interference from those other electronic devices.
So, in your opinion, even though it says fair to poor to middling and just two bars, if I'm accessing internet and email
go to speedtest.net.
Oh, that's what I was going to say. I didn't mean to interrupt you. I'm getting 13 up and 3 down, and my laptop.
You're fine.
My desktop is getting the same thing, which is hooked to the same system.
Right. So if you're getting 13 down and 3 up, then you're doing fine.
Oh,
remember that. That your router, your wireless connection, is capable of much faster than your internet connection. So that router is theoretically capable of 300 megabits per second, but, you know, your internet provider is only serving, you know, 16 or whatever megabits.
Oh.
And so you have plenty of headroom.
Yeah, so I think you're, you know, obviously you want to look at that thing and have a solid green light that says everything is as fantastic as it can possibly be.
Yeah.
But that doesn't always, I mean, the fact that the signal will degrade as you move further away, but as long as you have a solid connection and you're getting the download speed, so even if you're only showing one or two bars when you get to down the hall, if you're still downloading at 13 megabits, you're doing great.
Okay, that's encouraging. All right. That's what I needed to know, and thank you very much.
All right. Well, thanks for your call.
Night-night.
You know, when I was thinking back in the olden days of tech support for dial-up, I mean, people would sometimes pay too much attention to the handshake on a modem and determine that they weren't getting as good a connection as they possibly could because their 64 was it what were the 50 what was the speeds 56K? On modem? 56K. Huh?
56K.
If it did
288.
It would not negotiate a 56K connection. It might just show 54.
36.6.
I want my 200 kbps.
I mean, the reality is if it's pulling it down, you know, the data or not. You know, check out your speed. Do some speed tests.
300 baud.
Yeah. What do we got down there? We got to read this. Let's see.
Paint is a possible. So, like, you know, if he's got a couple of coats of, like, old paint, like lead-based paint. I know that'll kill a signal, but he's got other problems if he's got lead-based paint.
Or if you've got, like, an old house where they actually put in, like, the wire and then put
yeah, that's what I asked him, if he had chicken wire in the like walls, because that'll kill a signal.
Yeah, that will completely kill.
And then the second caller, it looks like, called in and said if he's going to do the Jay Lee testing theory where he unplugs, you know, don't just turn off the TV, don't just turn off the stereo, actually unplug them from the wall because a lot of them have instant on features and there's still probably some EMI.
But if he's getting 13 megabits down.
He's got no issues. It's like Dwight said, I mean, even if you're only getting 10% signal, that's still 30 megs. You know, and he's only getting 12 from his provider, so he's set.
Yeah, I mean, sure. the only where that might come more into play is if you're doing file transfer. On your local
computers,
network. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the reality is go test your speed. Don't look at those bars. Don't get alarmed by that stuff. Just don't get freaked out. It's like people who go looking in their log files and their caches and stuff and start freaking out.
What's interesting is that there's that kind of obsession in the mobile world too. And so if you have 3G and you've got, you know, reduced bars, the data speed goes, you know, down significantly until, you know, you're just grinding away. With LTE, if you go down to like 2 bars on LTE or 1 bar on LTE, you still have an awesome connection. So LTE has kind of gotten to the point where like your Wi-Fi router at home was. And I've gotten to where I don't even look at the bars when I have data unless I have no bars on an LTE phone.
My phone went from 3G to 4G just by software update. They just changed the little icon that said 3G and then it said 4G.
Oh, you have a? Do you have a 4S?
Yeah.
Yeah. The magic of software.
The magic of
AT&T.
All these people are saying they have 4G, but it's not real 4G. And then a few months later, hey, now you're not real 4G is 4G like everybody else's.
Okay. 713-526-5738 is the number to call if you want to be on the air. 713-526-KPFT. All of our lines are open. I had a good flurry of calls this evening as opposed to the last couple of weeks where it felt like we were struggling a bit. We're here full strength. Got a good connection to Pete. Dwight's voice is working.
Got full bars.
We got full bars. Exactly.
We just, you know, let's go to the bar. All right, see a call coming in. Groovehouse is going to quickly field that and make sure that it's suitable for putting on the air tonight. If you go check out our Facebook page, that's facebook.com/geekradio. I've posted a couple of in-studio photographs. If you haven't become a fan, by the way, you should do that. You should go like our page. But there are some in-studio photographs I shot with my nifty new circular fisheye lens that kind of give a nice distorted.
In one of those pictures, I look remarkably thin. I like that picture a lot.
Oh, you do?
Yes.
I had another one that made you not look as quite as svelte. I did not publish that one, but yes.
I appreciate your thoughtfulness.
First fisheye, the pucker lens.
What's that?
The pucker lens.
The pucker lens?
About 7 feet tall. And the reverse fisheye. It takes everything and pushes it into the middle.
Yeah, it's like the House of Mirrors. All right, so Groovehouse, I see we have a call. I see you have no voice.
Yes, we have a call.
All right, 713-526-5738. After this call, all of the lines are open, so if you want to get in the queue, now is the time. 713-526-KPFT. Groovehouse, who is it?
Up next, we're going to speak with James.
James, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Okay, yeah, how you doing? What I'm trying to find, a good, I have Windows 7, a compact laptop, and I'm trying to find a good free virus, the first question.
Okay, well, a good free antivirus, there's a number of them out there. AVG makes a free antivirus program. Kaspersky makes a free antivirus program. So you could try one of those two.
Okay. And the second question, I went on FileHippo, and I downloaded SpyBot and some more stuff. And then I came up with a MyStat web blog and say, Incredibot, and I can't erase it off.
And what's it called?
Incredibot.
So you managed to install a toolbars. Okay, if you Google search, there's a number of different sites. Is this in Internet Explorer or Firefox?
Internet Explorer.
Well, the first thing you probably do is if you click on tools, and then there's a toolbars option, you can turn it off there. Have you looked in Add Remove Programs?
Yeah, I did all that, but it's still popping up. Whenever I get on the internet,
mm-hmm.
it still pops up.
There are a lot of references to this. If you just do a Google search for Incredibar, you'll see a lot of uninstall guides. And
there's no need to buy any software. Right. Don't let any of the sites trick you into downloading anything or buying anything. But there are a number of discussion forums that talk about how to remove it. It's called the MyStart by Incredibar, and their uninstall guides all over the internet talk about how to get rid of it. So I would go out there and look for that. And it takes you through step by step. A number of these sites will take you through step by step what to click on and how to get rid of it.
Okay. And you were talking about the internet. We have AT&T, and they were supposed to upgrade us, but we run 2 or 3 laptops at a time. Since they didn't upgrade, it seemed like it's worse, the connection.
When you run more than when you have 3 computers using the internet at the same time?
Yeah.
Well, is anybody that's using the internet downloading movies or streaming video when they do that?
Well, sometimes we can be on eBay. They'd be watching Netflix or something like that.
Netflix is what's doing it.
Netflix will slow your whole network down if you've got that set to the highest resolution. Netflix has an option for you to not stream at the highest resolution. But whenever my wife gets online with Netflix, it tends to bog the network down. If you have more than one person trying to do Netflix, it can really slow things down. I've successfully run Netflix and Hulu at the same time, but I had a little bit of choppiness at some points doing that.
Okay.
So that's really just a function of your local network and your overall bandwidth to the internet.
Okay, thank you.
All right, you're welcome. Thanks for your call.
Yeah, particularly since a lot of people have mostly Wi-Fi networks, and two people are like on two laptops in two different parts of the house, and you both try to stream video on it, it's not gonna be.
You guys just get together and watch it together.
Exactly.
Well, last night I was watching something on Hulu on my big screen TV, and Cynthia's streaming Netflix on her iPad, and it looked good.
That's when, the big data packages, upwards of 20 megs start to look good, when you've got multiple streams and you've got, multiple users in the house. I can only imagine with kids in the house. I mean, you need at least 1,500.
Good Lord, everybody's phone and iPad and whatever. 713-526-5738, if you want to be on the air with us tonight. We are willing to entertain your call. Groovehouse is smiling ear to ear. So,
I turned my own mic up.
Good for you. Because Flick, it's... laser focused.
He's laser focused tonight. You can't, don't bother him. Shh.
He's like a laser disc player.
laser OCD.
Somebody go flip flicked.
I was reading Facebook. Because somebody posted a bunch of pictures and people were making comments.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
He's reading those comments with laser.
Does Technology Bytes have a Facebook page?
We do. Facebook.com/geekradio.
There you go.
So go like it.
Go like us.
Go like us.
We like to be liked.
Lycos. Ask Jeeves. He likes us.
Lichens.
The leek.
Like moss? Or, yeah. All right, Brewhouse.
Yes.
Who's up?
All right, up next on the show, we're going to speak with Eric.
Eric, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Yes, hello. My question, I had a Vast antivirus, and I had like the password protection where you pay like $10 or whatever, and it saves all your passwords. And I think what happened was it came up for renewal, and something, you know, I didn't renew it or whatever, and I couldn't access it. And so when I was trying to, you know, figure it out, it was telling me that a file called some RoboForm file was missing. And so I couldn't get it to work. So I just put in RoboForm.com, and that came up, and it's asking me for my main password for my computer. So I'm just wondering, is RoboForm a legitimate, you know?
RoboForm is legit.
Okay.
I've not visited our site. Let me double check to make sure RoboForm.
Yeah, I had RoboForm on my computer years ago. Not anymore, I have used
it. I want to make sure that they actually own that domain. I'm looking at RoboForm.com. Yeah, that's them. Yeah, they have the online thing. So yeah, I would trust the RoboForm site if they think that will get you to your passwords.
So if it says like www start RoboForm, or just should I, you know, it's like start and then it says RoboForm.
Start RoboForm dot one word, or is it start dot RoboForm?
Start dot RoboForm.
Let's see what that looks like. RoboForm.com is there, so they own the RoboForm.com domain. Okay. And so, start.RoboForm.com. RoboForm. RoboForm, RoboForm, RoboForm. Yes.
Start,
yes, I do. Yeah, that's theirs as well.
Okay, so that doesn't sound weird that RoboForm and Avast have some kind of connection, or does it?
It's possible they may have some kind of sharing agreement where you install one, it puts the other one there, but I've not heard of it.
Let's see. EasyPass versus RoboForm, Avast. RoboForm and Avast looks like they have teamed up in some regard.
Okay.
What's RoboForm DLL from Avast software? RoboForm DLL is part of Avast. EasyPass main module, Avast antivirus. So, yeah, it looks like they've tied themselves together.
Okay, so I'll go ahead and give them my, you know, password and stuff,
It's just the password for your RoboForm or Avast account. So,
okay. Well, thanks a lot.
All right, good luck. Thanks for your call.
Bye-bye.
All right.
Yeah, that is an issue. Like with a lot of the cloud stuff and things like that, is when you let your subscription lapse, you know, that data just kind of goes away, or can go away.
All right, well, we got all of our lines are open. All of them are open. And we've got time left in the show. Inflicted is all caught up on his comments, I think.
Yep, I should be good till another one comes in.
Your mother was one of the first ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bless her heart.
I should publish the picture that I've got where you're not covering your face.
I don't know how that happened, because I saw you with the camera. I put my hand up and I thought I heard
it. I took it. And then you put your hand down and I repositioned and I took another one. And your face isn't covered. I've got that, but I won't publish it because I respect your facial privacy. There's been many a shot I couldn't take because you weren't paying enough attention to cover your face. I guess I should just get a smiley face and just put it on there.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah. Well, on one of them, didn't you put the monkey Jesus?
I did. I put potato Jesus over your head for that one. God, where is that?
Where are the comments? Because they're not on these pictures.
It depends on whether you're looking at the ones on
different set of pictures.
Gotcha.
There's one on my Facebook page, one set on my Facebook page, and one set on the Geek Radio page.
Excellent.
But let's see. I think you're an administrator of that page, too, so... All right, we've got plenty of open lines here on Technology Bites. We're ready to talk to you about your DLL files. Let's get busy with your CAB files.
Hey-o.
713-526-5738. Groove House is standing by.
Do my CAB files turn you on?
Turn me on, CAB file.
Turn me on, CAB
file. I was just noticing on the program schedule for the station, there's actually two shows that have Groove House's name in them.
I'm not affiliated with either show.
And none that have mine.
Yeah.
Groove House is listed on there?
Well, the word groove.
Mondays at 11 p.m. and then Saturdays at 8 p.m.
Groove? Solar Grooves?
Yeah. One's called The Groove and the other one's called Solar Grooves.
I'm not affiliated with either show.
But there's none that have the word flicted that I saw.
I see Deadbeat. Radioactive.
I saw pure Vibs.
Living Art.
The Chestnut Tree.
Sound Awake.
713-526-5738. We want to put you on the air with Flick Technology Bites. I don't know. Just trying to make it. I'm trying to see if there's anything else that we could get off of one of your other names. No.
I just saw, have any of you heard about this rumor about Dell and the product called Ophelia?
Well, I don't think it's a rumor. I think it's something they talked about at CES, isn't it?
Did they? I guess the way they treated it, they were just talking about it. They call it I guess it's a project, so they've admitted it. Basically, for anybody who hasn't, Dell has a project codenamed Ophelia, a USB-sized self-contained computer which can provide access to virtually every major operating system there is, from the Mac OS to Windows to Google Chrome OS to cloud-based solutions from Citrix and Dell, all via the cloud.
Yeah, I think they were demoing at CES with Android.
Yeah, well, it's powered by the Android operating system to handle local tasks. But then I guess it connects through the cloud. That's what I was trying to kind of find more is how would you be getting access to these other operating systems? I guess would the operating system run in the cloud and is this basically kind of a terminal?
Yeah, they'd have to do kind of remote desktop kind of stuff. There are a lot of devices just like that already out there. Most of them are Chinese for like up, you know, $30 and $40, not very much. A lot of them even with like, you know, keyboard and HDMI and all kinds of different ports. Everything I've seen so far has been running Android.
Dell's VP of Cloud Operations said they want to start the product at $50 if they sell it. So just seems very, you know, I don't know. They seem short on, I guess they were demoing it, but it seems a little short on details. It's like, oh yeah, this $50 box that'll run Windows, Google Chrome, all these other things, and it seems like there's more to the story that's not in the story that I've found so far.
Hmm. Okay, looks like we got a call in the queue. Dwight?
Do you want me to punch it up?
No, I want Groove House to do it. That's his
job. I'll do it.
I wanted you to be on hand just in case this question demanded your attention. I saw you kind of gazing at your iPhone.
Yes.
I know you're already...
We've already discussed it in here, so...
You guys can answer it, I guess.
All right, Groove House will solve this one.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Up next, we're going to speak with Jason.
Jason, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, guys.
Hey. Hello.
Yeah, I just had a comment, kind of clarification on the 3G, 4G thing on the iPhone. The software upgrade that allowed you to get to 4G on the iPhone 4 is actually, you're still on the 3G network. What the carriers kind of fool you with the 4G because it's actually referring to the data speed and not the actual network that you're on, so you're not actually on LTE.
That's right. It's HSPA plus.
That's correct.
Or, as I like to call it, 4G.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Which was 4G until AT&T needed to have 4G.
Right, right. So
exactly.
it's purely a marketing thing, and it's
exactly.
Now, what's interesting about in the earliest test of HSPA plus on AT&T, it was sometimes on a lot of phones. That I tested slower than 3G. they've improved it recently, and I think it may have to do with the fact that they improved the backhaul for their towers in order to do LTE. On my iPhone 5, which does HSPA Plus if it can't talk to LTE, I get around 7 megabits down with it now when it shows 4G. Have you done any speed tests with it
no,
on the 4S?
No.
On LTE, you know, I've gotten as high as 35, 36 megabits down. But the 4G, when you need your 4G, works pretty good now. It's a pretty respectable speed on AT&T. And it always was on T-Mobile, they can get up to 24 megabits down.
I thought the HPSA Plus, like, doubled the bandwidth. I don't remember how it did it because it went over two channels or something. I don't remember the details. I just remember it was supposed to, like, up to double, I think, the possible speed of 3G.
Yeah, and T-Mobile's gotten squeezed even more out of it there.
So, thank you.
Sure, no problem.
All right.
All right, you guys have a good one.
You too. All right. Dwight, our resident mobile speed expert.
And I love the mobile speeds. I love LTE. I want to have its babies. I think it's just.
can I subscribe to one of your babies?
It has a cap.
It's not a baby. Like it's a hot spot.
Like a stocking cap.
Yeah,
it's turned on now.
I do not like my mobile bill anymore, but I love my phone.
Do you have unlimited?
I don't have unlimited.
Yeah.
So I'm paying for a little cushion because I don't want to go over. I would imagine that I'm paying for the privilege of not having to babysit my data usage because I've got two devices connected to my data pool and I want to make sure that we don't take the ding, but I may scale back because I'm not hitting that cap very regularly. But I love having that high speed internet.
Who are you riding on? T-Mobile?
Verizon.
Verizon.
We see you, Roland.
I was just wondering, like, about Walmart's plan that they're offering now. But if with two devices, I'm not sure.
$45 unlimited.
Yeah,
iPhone one.
But I don't know about crossing the streams.
I don't know. Well, I'm on contract, so I'm not leaving. I just signed a new contract, so I'm not leaving.
The Walmart one I know is AT&T. It's one of the companies that piggybacks on AT&T.
Is it AT&T or Sprint? I wasn't sure AT&T. Which one it was.
Although I do have a diabolical plan that will not only lower the in the overall household budget, there is the cell phone, the data plan, the connected iPad, which is being paid for, which is what I'm paying for. And there is a landline. So, what I can do is, and it won't really lower my bill necessarily, what I'm going to do is I'm going to convert my home security system to cellular, which they offer now for ADT. So, you know, that whole question about whether or not your landline have to have a filter if you're getting DSL. You could just convert your home security to cellular, which I think is great because they can't cut your phone line. They being the nasty criminals who want to rob you blind.
However, your house may have to call 3 or 4 times before it finally gets a connection.
Well, have you heard that that's a problem?
No, I had cellular when I was over on the east side of downtown, and we never had any issues.
Yeah, so if that way I pay a little bit more per month to get that service because they charge more for it, not much more, and then drop the landline, saving that money, and then get a free iPhone 4 and finally get my wife to have a cell phone and add that, you know, onto the plan. Unfortunately, they do ding you a little bit. It's $30, I guess, to add another phone to the plan. But she would have a cell phone. I could actually reach her and we'd get rid of the landline and our security system would be updated. So I won't hate my bill as much. It won't be much better, but I will have less reason to hate it.
Yeah, we've got 5 phones on our family plan don't have the shared data. We've got, I'm unlimited, but and I think one of the other phones is unlimited. And my wife has LTE at 2 gig, and she's come nowhere near maxing that out.
Really?
Nowhere near it, yeah.
Because she primarily uses it at home on the Wi-Fi?
She uses it at home and at work on Wi-Fi. Mostly yeah. what she uses.
I have a lot of Wi-Fi time between the office and home, and so I'm thinking I could probably drop my data plan down a little bit.
Now, but I don't want to give up unlimited because I've started. I stream Sons of Anarchy on the elliptical, which is just kind of bizarre, and I watch, and I've been able by using Netflix's ability to turn down the quality of the stream, I'm nowhere near approaching the 5 gigabytes of data where AT&T starts throttling LTE. So it's been that's been really handy.
Yeah, yeah. I just I like having the fast data. I don't use my phone for internet terribly much. It would be nice if I could stream, like, music and movies, especially music. I'd just like to have that be my audio source in the car. And I haven't done any tests to see what kind of data consumption. Now, I will say this, just for those of you who may have... we got time for this real quick. I called to cancel my XM subscription on my car. And they...
You get a free one when you...
Get a free one. You get the. Right. It comes with a car, and you get a free year or whatever. But it was coming up for renewal, and it was going to be however much they charge, which is a lot of money.
A lot. It's like $12 or $15 a month. Or
yeah,
something.
They charge a lot for it. So I said I wanted to cancel, and they said, well, why are you going to cancel? And I said, I don't use it that much. And says, how about if we discount it 80% for 8 months? And so they discounted it crazy.
Yeah, they when I was going to do the same thing, and they ended up giving me... I think it worked out to like $5 a month for a year, which I felt like, you know what, $5 a month, that's not too bad. But yeah, when the original pricing they were offering was $12 or $15 a month, there's no, I'll just, you know, use my iPhone and either stream over Bluetooth or hook it in.
When but they discounted it to that, did they say, you know, You listen enough hours, and for one latte a month, you could.
Yeah, no, but so if you are an XM subscriber, call and negotiate yourself a better deal when it comes up time for renewal, because they are looking to hang on to their customers. That's my consumer advice for the evening. All right, Groovehouse, I see we have a call in the queue.
Yes, we do.
Who is it? What do they want?
All right, up next is Wayne.
Wayne, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hi, guys. Got a social media question, maybe.
Okay.
I get on, like, Ymail, which I'm going to drop because it's such a pain, and Gmail. There's people always want to chat with me. I notice in the bottom, I just have no idea who they are. Are they scammers?
Well, in my I don't use Ymail, but Gmail, the people that want to chat with me are usually my...
What's Ymail?
It's...
Yahoo Mail.
Yahoo Mail. Yahoo is
probably... Those are definitely scammers.
Those are scammers. Gmail tends to be people I know who don't know anybody.
I don't see hardly any Gmail chats going on with anybody that I don't know. Yahoo, on the other hand, I get a lot of stuff from, like, you know... Viagra Girl 1979, like, hey, why don't you add me so
she's
we can
hot.
Chat?
Right.
Yeah. Right. Yahoo, I definitely get a lot of those on.
You can usually tell by what the message says if it's a scam or not. First of all, do you know the person?
Right. I never know the person. And there's never a message there. It just says, you know, Dick 69 wants to talk to you or something.
Yeah. Yeah. I would not respond to those because usually they'll have some kind of link in there that leads to nothing good.
That's what I was figuring. I just, you know, I'm so computer unsavvy. And so,
but Gmail, I've never had a problem with. Gmail has great spam filtering. I don't ever see any. I've only had a few people ever want to chat with me, and they're just people who, for some reason, really love Gmail chat that I know.
Like me.
Yeah.
So, and also, Gmail adds gives people the capability, if you've exchanged email with them or if you have them in your contacts, it gives them, they can reach out and see if you want to chat. It's usually a request to chat.
Right. The two contacts I have, I know, aren't going to be chatting with me.
Right.
Right.
So that's, you know, you can pretty much ignore that. But on Ymail, yeah, it's probably scammers. Same thing if for AOL Instant Messenger.
It's the same thing for Facebook. I get all these friends requests from people I've never heard of. Every once in a while, it's a true one. You know, did you work at company XYZ in the 80s? And I go, no.
Anybody can friend you on Facebook. I don't think I've
gotten some bogus friend requests.
There have been some that are...
You just ignore those.
Yeah. You just have to go look at their profile, and that's probably, if they're scammers, that's what they want you to do. And it's like, ah!
Yeah, the ones that typically that I end up seeing is like some like picture of a fairly attractive girl that asks something about if I work with some company, and I go, and she's got like, you know, 12 or 17 followers.
All guys.
And they're all guys, and they're all like, hey, baby, you're hot. And I'm like, yeah, this was not legit.
Yeah, because I mean, I don't even have a picture on Facebook. It's me. There's a picture of a monkey playing a piano to three chihuahuas.
So, I want to be your friend.
Yeah, we'll all friend you.
Yeah, so I really wonder why I get so many friend requests when it's I'm basically on there just for my niece and nephew who live across the country and stay in touch with them.
Probably a bunch of chihuahuas friend requesting because they want to see you play the piano also.
Yeah, that could be true.
I have a Facebook friend that apparently is a chihuahua, so I don't know.
Moving up in the world, are you?
I am.
All right. Well, have a good night, guys. Right, I appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks for your call.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, I think that's all we have time for. I'm getting Dwight's raspy voice.
Oh, noes.
I hope not. I'm looking forward to going home and curling up under the heater blanket. I am such an old man. I broke out the heater blanket last night. And
is that what you old people call that?
A heater blanket?
Heater blanket.
Crank up the heater blanket.
What else
Martha?
Do you call it?
Electric blanket.
Electric blanket? No, it's a heater blanket.
Before electricity.
Put the hot coals in it.
It's electrical.
It's got a three dog night, isn't it, Jay?
Regardless, I turned on my heater blanket last night. And it's like sleeping in an easy bake oven.
It's well done.
It's just so.
Didn't the light from the bulb keep you
40 watt bulb?
After 8 hours, you're done.
After 8 hours, I am done. Well, you know, put on my sleeping
your
mask.
Your stocking cap.
I have to keep a little lantern by the bed. To find my way.
You gotta find the chamber pot.
No. Look, I live in the modern times. I do not
use. I've got a water closet. Pot.
Stay out of my chat rooms.
It's an electric chamber pot.
Zorch. I do not know what's wrong with y'all.
I do.
It's my heater blanket, and I like it. You're just jealous. Because you don't have a plug to heat in.
I'm waiting for the electric slanket.
A heater slanket. A heater slanket. I don't know about that. All right. Well, thanks for tuning in to Technology Bites. We're so glad you could be here. We'll be back next Wednesday night for more of this if you're listening locally. And stick around for whatever it is that's coming up next. It's going to be awesome. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
And he's
Groovehouse.
Starting later in January, KPFT embarks on its winter fun drive. Visit kpft.org now to make a pre-pledge to your favorite shows. Your pre-drive support could trim hours and even days off of the upcoming marathon before it even starts. That's right. Contribute now at kpft.org to support your favorite programming and reduce our winter drive. You can pledge creatively, offer a matching fund, become a sustainer, or get some great thank you gifts. Your support right now helps shorten those long fund drive days. Again, that's kpft.org to pre-pledge securely online toward our upcoming fund drive. Keep up with updates at facebook.com and, if you can, help out at our pledge center. Stay tuned for training dates and more. Go to kpft.org to pre-pledge now. KPFT Houston.
Our year-end giving campaign is over, and listeners gave more than $34,000, surpassing our station goal. Our final thanks go out to, in Houston, Jan, Richard, Ann, Elias, Mary, Mark, Marion, Brad, Lynn and Rob, Joan, and Tony, Sarah Lou, David, Karen, Norman, Scott, Nancy, Eric, Jean, Douglas, Ravi, Emily, Michael, Lori, Charles, and Phyllis, among others. Also, thanks to Marianne in Pearland, Harris in Longview, Robert and Stephen in Sugarland, Edward in Lake Jackson, David in Nassau Bay, David in Missouri City, Egberto in Kingwood, Greg in Mount Shasta, Charlie and Michael in Spring, Gail and Leslie in Bel Air, David in League City, Gerald in the Woodlands, Greer and Gregory and Katie, Ross in College Station, and Maria in Galveston, and many, many more. If you missed your chance to donate, visit kpft.org to make your secure online pledge. This is KPFT Houston.